It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. A little bit earlier this week. Really, a lot of bit earlier this week. Getting this in your hands on a Monday instead of a Thursday because, as I mentioned on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Brian and I each have different travel schedules this week, so we thought it'd be easier just to get the Fantasy Feast done on a Monday while we're both at home base. So getting this one to you earlier this week. We'll be back on the normal schedule next week. RossTucker.com, of course, always the place to find this, and iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, really wherever podcasts are found. But RossTucker.com is your hub. It's also, by the way, where you can support the podcast if you'd like, whether it's the Amazon banner ads on all the podcast pages or PayPal contribution, or really all of our sponsors like DraftKings, etc. You can also spread the word via social media. We love, love, love those of you that do that. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL, the former journeyman offensive lineman. He is at Evan Silva, who just kicks butt on a daily basis for rotoworld.com because he has the disease. Our producer, Brian Neal, at RTF Podcast. Also, the first time you know when the podcast is up. And also, for any podcast-related news, at RTF Podcast. You can even do Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL if you are so inclined. Very, very excited for today's guest, mainly because Evan is so excited about today's guest. Remember, this is your show. So send us your emails, rtfp@rostucker.com. Put fantasy or feast in the subject line. Hit us up with tweets, topics you want to hit on this offseason. That is much appreciated. Anyway, we'll get to some more stuff later, but I want to make sure we welcome in today's big eater. That's Matt Waldman.
Big Eater of the Week.
I like that. That's our first time actually using that sounder. We figured that would be better than just always doing the next meal. Next meal is more for like when we're going through different news and notes. But if we're getting a guest on that we're going to go long with, he is the big eater of the week. Today it's Matt Waldman, at Matt Waldman. Now, his Twitter profile, by the way, he's at Matt Waldman on Twitter. His Twitter profile says magazine journalist, rookie scouting portfolio author, football guys, and football outsiders columnist. It should also, by the way, say the subject of Evan Silva's infatuation, because Evan's a big fan of yours, Matt. He like I haven't seen him this excited since I told him I'd buy him a Twinkie. I mean, he is very, very excited. So we got to start with this. For those people that aren't that familiar, including me to some extent, I mean, I know about you. I just don't know that much about you. Who are you?
Who am I? I work as a magazine journalist at a university. But I also have spent about a good decade studying tape for the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, which is my publication, and I study skill positions specifically for this publication. It's really a 250 to 300 page draft guide that covers between 150 to 180 prospects. I do it with my own process that's based in a lot of best practices used in my former life as a manager, doing a lot of operations work and learning best practices. And then in addition to that 300 pages of goodness that you get each year, I show all my work because, like you said, who am I? You know, was I a former player? Was I a former coach? No. But I basically show all my work. So I basically, what you end up seeing is a PDF that has well over 1,000 pages. Most people read the first 250 to 300 each year, but they love the fact that I show all my work and I'm transparent about my scouting process. And so that has, you know, generated some work that I do with groups like Football Guys and Football Outsiders, where I'm a columnist and I expand my look at players from not just skill guys, but also defensive players, some folks along the offensive and defensive lines.
All right, well, before we start firing players off at you, of course, now I have a couple more questions based on what you just said. Who are your clients? Who purchases the rookie scouting portfolio?
You know, a wide variety, you know, I would say the biggest base of folks that purchase it are fantasy owners, especially hardcore dynasty league owners, but also there are people who play and redraft in daily leagues who love the takes because they get to see players early and understand, you know, what the book is on these guys. And so they're not thinking, where did this guy come from? They know where they are out of nowhere. I do have some folks who have worked in the NFL or currently work in the NFL who have contacted me and said that they purchased my book and keep in touch with me. And, you know, lots of media, you know, it seems like the, you know, media likes to read my stuff too. So it's an honor to have, you know, folks that I read want to read my work too.
What does it mean when you say you show your work?
I show my, let's put it this way. I have a glossary that defines everything that I study. It shows my process in terms of how I define, you know, each technique, what the point value is for it. I have checklists that are 20 to 25 questions in length for each position. And I show you the checklist and the grading report there, but I also write down play by play what it is that I see. And I share that, you know, they're raw notes, but it amounts to, you know, 600 to 800 pages at the end of the year printed out from a database that I keep. And so it's an insane amount of detail. People look at it and it's funny because I have raving fans, but at first they're kind of skeptical. Then they get it and they look at it and they're kind of blown away by the amount of detail. But again, most people just read the magazine length section of the publication. I just do that because that's part of my process. Helps me to develop my skills and learn a little bit more each year and keep track of information that helps me, you know, develop a better process every year that I do this.
And then the last question I have before we dive into players is just, oh my gosh, I lost my train. Oh no, I know what I was going to say.
Am I crazy for doing this?
Yeah. No. You know, so you've been you study all these guys. In your experience, and maybe this is a question for Evan as well, but I know Evan doesn't study the rookies, you know, to the same level you do. The success that they have in the NFL, in particular their first couple years, how much of that do you think is a product of your evaluation and them as a player? And how much of it is the team that they get drafted by, that system, you know, who the quarterback might be, et cetera? I mean, that's a kind of a loaded question. It's tough to put a number on it, but I just think it's interesting. You put all this work in terms of the players, but I still think that there's some percentage, maybe a decent percentage, that then goes to how they're utilized, how they're coached, who's around them, all those other outside factors that really don't have anything to do with your evaluation of them as a prospect coming out.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I would agree that it is that there's a lot to do with fit, but I would say that it's not an either-or proposition. I'd actually say that a good evaluation explains that it's not just some binary ranking. You know, I am not a fan of rankings. I do rankings, but I like to look at things a little bit, you know, wider in perspective, because if I do a good job scouting a player, what I'm going to share with you is that I may have this guy ranked 25th out of 50 wide receivers, and it may look like that means he's, you know, he's a mid to late round pick who isn't going to be a, you know, productive NFL player. But if I'm scouting what I see correctly and I'm talking about the traits that he has, then I can also share with you where he performs well, what are the situations where he can be used well to maximize his potential. Because, you know, I made this analogy last night, but it's kind of like if you were forced, and it's kind of a violent analogy, but if you were forced to have to use a weapon to defend yourself and you had the choice between a knife and a pencil, everyone who's scouting the weapon might say that the knife is the better weapon overall. But in the, you know, maybe you're in a situation where, you know, the pencil with a sharpened lead tip, that thin stick might actually be more effective in the situation that you're in because of the size of the weapon. So it's the same thing when it comes to looking at football players. The situation dictates a lot, but if you can identify those things in the same way that NFL teams, or in a similar way that NFL teams may identify those things, you're giving your readers an opportunity to see, as your colleague Josh Norris would say, where they win.
Wow, that's really cool, man. Well, I'm glad we have you on. I'll let Evan fire off the first guy he wants to get your take on.
I'd like to say that Matt is, you know, for my money, the premier, from a predictive standpoint, analyst of college players and, you know, how they will transition into the pros. And I mean, this is a treat to get to talk to you. I mean, the list of your hits, you know, for guys as small as Bobby Rainey, to, you know, as big as Le'Veon Bell, who a lot of people were skeptical about coming out, DeMarco Murray as well. I mean, your track record is very, very impressive. What I wanted to ask you about were a bunch of polarizing guys. You know, people in the draft community have strong opinions one way or the other about a lot of guys. And I wanted to ask you about them. The first one that comes to mind is Jalen Strong.
Yeah, certainly. It's funny. I was just writing a section about Jalen Strong this morning, and it's funny because he's split. There's two ways that people are split on him. Either they look at him as a dynamic athlete who they believe is going to be a primary receiver, or they see him as almost just another guy in terms of being a contributor, maybe a low-end starter in the league who doesn't offer as much big play potential, maybe more of a possession guy. And I think that what happens here is that people see the 4.4 speed, they see the height, they see the way that he plays the ball in the air, and they see dynamic football player. But then you watch the tape and you see a guy who's more of a straight line route runner, who wins by really being patient with his stems and using a good pace and length to his stem that forces defensive backs to lose their patience. And then he wins, you know, as a result of building up that momentum and speed. He's not a sudden athlete. And I think that's really where I stand, is that the most dynamic skill players tend to be sudden. I don't think he's sudden, but I think that he's dynamic with the ball in the air and when it's time to adjust and win the ball. So to me, he's more of a possession receiver. He's a guy that can get deep with the help of play action. He can, if you have maybe a dynamic tight end in the middle of the field, or a dynamic running back who can hold the attention of a safety long enough that it kind of puts the safety in a bind as to who to cover on that side of the field, then you're going to see Strong win more often deep. But where he's really going to do the most damage for you is probably on some of the more short and intermediate perimeter routes, also some crossing routes, and mostly in the red zone. So he can be productive for fantasy owners. He can be a productive player, but he's not the guy that you're looking at as your primary wide receiver, you know, in a winning offense. You know, Kelvin Benjamin, for instance, I think that if he didn't have a guy like Greg Olsen, he would have struggled even more than he did. I mean, he had a good, productive fantasy season, but he had his issues last year that, you know, were often talked about in terms of, you know, adjusting and transitioning to the game as a wide receiver.
Matt, when you say sudden, it's interesting because I know what that means, but I wonder how many people listening really know what you mean by sudden. Would you say more explosive or quick? What's another way to describe sudden for people that have no idea what you're talking about?
Yeah, thank you for asking, for clarifying that, because yeah, it's certainly easy, you know, sometimes to just kind of gloss over things like this. And to me, sudden is the high end, or the, you know, the extreme end of being quick and explosive. Somebody who can take one step or a minimum amount of steps and cover a lot of ground, or be able to move, you know, laterally, or to get downfield and get to his top speed right away, or not, you know, as fast as possible. A guy like Duke Johnson, who we may talk about later, has the skill to get up to his top speed right away. Same with Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is a sudden athlete. He was a sudden athlete at 230 pounds. And you can see that not in his 40 time, but in the other numbers, in the short shuttle, in the three cone drill. Those are some of the numbers that show how quick he is at changing direction and how fast he gets up to his top speed.
TJ Yeldon is a guy that I really like. I think Ross likes him. Greg Cosell likes him. It seems like there are people in the draft community who do not like him. A lot of people. And I would like to get your take on him, Matt, because he seems to be another polarizing guy.
Oh, I love him. It's funny that you mentioned all those guys, that you guys all like him, and that you mentioned that Greg Cosell likes him. And I'm glad to hear that, because I think he's one of those runners that I think it's easy for the general public to look at and say, look, he's not a top end explosive athlete, compared to some of the flashier guys that we're going to see, in this very strong draft class. But good running back play is the ability to be in control of your eyes and your feet, that marriage of your eyes and feet, to see the patterns of the line of scrimmage coming, as you approach it, and to be able to make adjustments that are fluid and smart and mature for the down and distance situation. And also to be able to translate, really their strength into, what I would call power, being able to drive through, arm tackles, finish strong, turn small gain, minimal gains into smaller, small manageable gains that don't put the offense in a bad situation down after down. And that's what TJ Yeldon does very well. He runs with I kind of joke around that he runs with that kind of Flintstone twinkle toes type of step that you'd see Herschel Walker use, kind of that short stride. But he's quick with it, he's controlled with it, he can change direction, and he can generate power through his hips to drive through wraps, finish strong, and he can get into the open field and, turn some nice gains. He, as maybe a guy like Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network would say, he's probably going to be a guy who breaks, hits more doubles than he does home runs. But the fact that he can catch ball in the backfield, he's wise about when to bounce outside and stay inside, and he shows a lot of potential as a pass protector who can stone a linebacker or really at least help out on a dynamic defensive end enough that gives the quarterback time to make his throws. These are all things that you're going to want from a running back, especially one who can move the chains, who you can keep in pretty much every down. He may not be your big play threat, in the sense of that you're worried about, the defense is worried about him breaking a 50, 60 yard gain, but he can generate a lot of 10 to 20 yard gains over the course of his career.
Watching him in like the way that he moves his feet and like he just glides, it kind of reminds me of Arian Foster a little bit, like the way he glides.
Yeah. Sure. And I think that's indicative of a player who, when their eyes and feet are married like that. I mean, to me, that's the integrate. That's kind of that it factor in some ways. I like to talk about it factors, integration of technique. And that's really when you can marry a number of disparate techniques and use them wisely in a variety of situations, often situations that you don't always encounter, because you've just integrated those skills to a level that it's intuitive. And I think that Yeldon is that kind of player. When it comes to his techniques, he's not, again, he may not be Jay Ajayi in terms of his special athletic skills, or a guy like Amir Abdul in terms of how explosive he can be, but he's certainly someone that maximizes what he does athletically, and really that's what you're looking for. His baseline athletic skills are more than good enough to be an NFL starter. And when you take the wisdom and the skill that he has conceptually and put that all together, he has a chance to be a very good starting running back in the NFL.
Matt, we'll probably get to some more running backs. In fact, I know we will. But one guy I wanted to ask you about, because I just watched him in a couple college games this year. I haven't really studied him. And I don't know that I've ever heard of a college player moving from tight end to wide receiver before. That was a first for me. Devin Funchess from Michigan. What is he and what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think Funchess really qualifies as, you know, I've kind of joked that I think Devin Funchess is brought to you this year by Kelvin Benjamin, because it's he's a tweener of a player. Some, you know, we've heard the anonymous NFL scout compare him, or NFL executive compare him to Jimmy Graham. And I think that what they're really getting at here, or I hope they're getting at, is that he's more of a player without a traditionally defined position. And it means that teams will have to be creative with how they use him to maximize the skills that he brings to the table. Funchess at the combine, you know, we saw he ran, I think it was a 4.7 40, and then later ran a 4.5 40 at his pro day. So maybe he's a little faster. Certainly during this year, he had a toe injury and some ligaments that were torn that limited him, but he played throughout the entire season and didn't miss any time. So he's kind of a tough guy, but he's someone that when you look at what he does best, you don't want him matched up with a fast corner unless he's going to be running routes where he can use the sideline as his friend, or he's got a mismatch in terms of the type of route that he's going to be able to turn and face the quarterback and make the play and use his height. So it's not going to be a lot of timing plays that you're looking for from Devin Funchess. At the same time, he's quick enough to work underneath linebackers and use some suddenness on turns to be able to do the short routes and get it some yards after the play, after the catch. But he's not a dynamic runner after the catch. Again, that speed isn't quite there. That burst is pretty good, but not great. You see some pretty plays where, you know, certainly on the highlights where he leaps over people and shows some fluidness to his athleticism, which is what helps him make adjustments to the football in the air. But he's not someone that is going to be like Vernon Davis, where if you give him an inch, he's going to take a mile. He doesn't bounce off a lot of hits. He doesn't run through a lot of tackles, and he certainly isn't that. He doesn't get up to his top speed right away. So he's going to benefit more from a play action game or a game where they throw more 50-50 balls, where he's, you know, they're going to trust him to make nice adjustments and catch the ball with those big hands of his. But again, it's going to be more about him facing and posting up to make those plays than it is making sudden turns where sometimes he loses track of the football in those cases. So he's a specific player where he goes is really going to matter about how high his potential is. I think that he could be a high end fantasy wide receiver too, in a system where you already have a strong, you know, it's kind of like Eric Decker with the Broncos. You know, when he had two or three options surrounding him and he didn't have to be the man and he got mismatches or they could use him on certain routes, he thrived with a great quarterback. I think Funchess needs that to succeed on that level. Otherwise, he's more of a guy who can help your team move the chains and generate some big plays in the red zone, but he's not going to be that dynamic guy who's going to be matched up with the top defender on that team, and they're going to have to worry about him being a constant mismatch.
The thing that bothered me with Funchess was I have never seen a big man go down so easily. I mean, yeah. he doesn't break any tackles, man. I mean, you know, a little DB will grab his ankles and he's tackled. Here's another one, and this is my kind of thought process regarding Duke Johnson. So if you look at Giovanni Bernard and Frank Gore, who they were coming out of college, just on a sheet of paper, you know, they were almost the exact same height and weight. They had basically the exact same 40 time. They were both excellent receivers, excellent receiving backs, but there was one big difference between them, and that's that Frank Gore had the ability to break tackles inside for me. You know, he could run inside, and that's something that Giovanni Bernard, you know, kind of lacked. So do you think that Duke Johnson, who is, you know, another guy who's like 5'9", 207, something like that, same 40 time, excellent receiver. I mean, he makes some amazing catches even down the football field. Do you think that he falls more toward the Gio Bernard side, or do you think that he can run inside and break tackles?
Well, it's funny because as a former matriculate of the University of Miami, I'm a big fan of the University of Miami running backs. Wade, I'm extending back there. And Gore, certainly, I mean, I remember Larry Coker saying when he was a running backs coach for Oklahoma State, and he coached and helped recruit guys like Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas, say that Frank Gore was the best high school running back he had ever seen, period, hands down, end of story. And so after those, you look at what Gore's done on two bad knees or two injured knees that he's recuperated from, and it just shows you what he even could have been if he had stayed healthy. I kind of think he's that Duke Johnson kind of is the guy that's in between those two players who also played at the University of Miami, and that's Clinton Portis. I think that he's more of a Clinton Portis type of runner, where he can break some tackles, though he's not a dynamic tackle breaker like Frank Gore can be. But he has the vision. He runs tough. He just has to protect the ball a little bit better. And teams knew that his effort plays would force him into situations where they could hold him up and rip the ball loose. But I've seen him run tough in games where he got high carry counts and he was able to, you know, lead with the pads. It's not something you're going to want him to do down after down. He's not that kind of player. But he is someone that I think you can get him, you know, you're going to get him in space a good bit. And then at the end of the games, you can have him run tough and he can take some of that. He can give you some of those critical late game carries, and push a pile a little bit, run through hits, run with good balance. He did it against Georgia Tech last year with some, you know, some pretty good NFL prospects on the field that he was running through, like Jeremiah Atashu, was a good example of someone that he was able to handle like that. So I think he's a little bit in between, and I know I'm, you know, I feel like I'm taking the easy way out saying that, but I looked at, you know, he's a guy that I compared to a lot with Clinton Portis and reminded me of that UM back.
Matt, last question, and we got to get you on again sometime because this is excellent. One guy, is there one other guy that you feel really, really strongly about, maybe different than what the trend is or the consensus of the other so-called gurus, especially the TV guys?
Yeah, there's one guy who's my favorite player in this draft. He's not the best player. I'm not claiming he's going to be great, but I do think that he is a vastly underrated wide receiver. And anybody who follows me on Twitter already knows who this is. It's Nebraska's wide receiver, Kenny Bell. I think that this is a, if you took like one part Hines Ward, a little bit of Marvin Jones, some Donald Driver, maybe some Emmanuel Sanders, and a little flair of Brandon Lloyd and mixed them all together, you would get a guy like Kenny Bell. He is gritty. He's mentally and physically tough. When he makes a mistake, he comes back with a big play. But you look at his combine scores, and it matches what you see on the field, which is a player who can make the first man miss and take, you know, he can run the ball and take it to the house on a reverse or end around or after the catch, but he also makes tough plays in traffic. He's an excellent blocker. They run to his side on a regular basis. He's someone that, you know, can get open and shows some decent skill with releasing from the line of scrimmage. He can tell a story with his routes. He just didn't have great quarterback play, and Nebraska is not known as a hotbed for producing wide receivers. The last wide receiver who was a starting receiver in the NFL with a decent career was Irving Fryer, I think, in 1984. So the number one overall pick. You know, if you contrast him with a guy like Nelson Agholor, who they're similar dimensions, and Agholor, I think, probably got a second round grade by the, you know, by the committee that determines this type of stuff. They're very similar athletes. I think Bell's a better player, but you know, look at USC's track record for producing wide receivers in the recent past, and there's seven or eight during that same span, and far many more who have been contributors to NFL teams. So Kenny Bell is a guy that I think is vastly underrated.
Matt, this was fantastic. Really enjoyed having you come on. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. I've been looking forward to doing this all week, and I appreciate you guys having me on. Look forward to doing it again.
Thanks so much, Matt. That was awesome. Killed it.
Thank you.
All right, Evan. You were right. That guy was awesome. I like his voice. I like his process that he puts all his notes that you can check him out. He's at Matt Waldman on Twitter, and he will definitely, definitely be on the podcast again because he was awesome. Almost as awesome as winning thousands of dollars, huge cash prizes at DraftKings.com. Baseball season is almost here. You know they got spring training going. Daily fantasy. No season-long commitments. It's a new season every time you play. Pick two pitchers, eight position players. You can even follow Evan's brother, Drew Silva. He'll give you some tips. Stand to the cap, and you can win, baby. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use Evan's promo code. Not even my code. It's Evan's. Feast to play for free in the $100,000 fantasy baseball contest on opening day. First place takes home $10,000. Use promo code FEAST for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. That also will do it for an awesome Big Eater episode with Matt Waldman from Football Guys. That was fantastic. Plus, we went a whole episode with Evan Silva, maybe saying less than 70 words. Absolutely incredible. Maybe this will be the format, depending on the research and the response we get. This may be the format to try to limit the amount of words that Evan Silva says. Maybe that's the key to growing this thing. Or you guys spreading the word via social media helps as well. iTunes rankings, comments, Amazon, PayPal, RossTucker.com. Stick a fork in us, especially me. I think we're done.
Thanks for downloading the Fantasy Feast Eaton podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and the Even Money Podcast as well. All of which are available at RossTucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
Because sometimes you need a little fun with your sports.
This is not a sports show. This is a me show.
The Steve Zavid Show from Yahoo Sports Radio.
Sally, how soon before Scott's daughter Instagrams her?
Sports talk with fun and frivolity.
Are you out of your mind?
I mean, am I talking about a sports show?
God, I sound terrible, don't I? Oh, excuse me. Hello and welcome.
Take three.
Listen to the Steve Zavid Podcast on Podcast One.
Just search Zavid. C-Z-A-B-A-N.
I got carried away. I'm very sorry.